Good evening, Los Angeles, and welcome to The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio, Chinatown's only micro-broadcasting radio station. My name is Nicholas Miller, and I am here with the ever-lovely Stephen Cato.
You're really too kind, Nicholas. That is just too much.
That's right, Steve. The weather has been forgiving, and you're clearly back into your exercise routine. Steve shows up a little sweaty when the weather gets good.
Yeah.
But that's a topic for another night, right, Steve?
Yeah, that's right. The weather here is pretty up and down. I mean, it's supposed to get really rainy this weekend. Let's see how things go. I think we could really use the rain, but it's nice that it's been kind of cool. Keeps the sweat off. It's true.
Yeah. Well, I guess you got to do something after that Kelly Mark talking show last week, which I think thoroughly stressed out everyone who even came near it.
Oh my God.
You didn't even have to fully hear it or even hear it at all. Just the kind of, it had an aura of stress around it. It was painfully stressful, but very well executed, wouldn't you say, Steve?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that was definitely some great talking, but it was also extremely demanding of an audience. I was talking to Max Krivitsky from Too True, who's had the radio show before us for 2+ years almost, I think. You know, this is a really stable section of the K-Chung broadcasting calendar. And he was saying how much it stressed him out too. And he's a really relaxed guy.
Yeah. Well, we're switching gears this week and doing something a bit, outside the norm. Our guest tonight is a poet who hails from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Although I can tell from the internet that he is currently a resident of Marfa, Texas. Yet another one of those strange bridges from the talking show to Marfa, Texas. You visited Marfa, Texas, didn't you, Steve?
I have, yeah. It's an interesting place. It's a very dry, arid area. It has a very strange, and I would argue pretty artificial economy. It's really weird, but quite nice, I have to say. I mean, you've also definitely been to Marfa, haven't you, Nicholas?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the arts and I'm from Texas, so of course I've been there.
But yeah.
Well, our guest tonight describes himself as the son of white trash asphyxiation, whose childhood included selling cut flowers along the highway for his mother and helping her shoplift.
Is that your phone?
That's right. I hope that everyone will join me in welcoming tonight's guest, C.A. Conrad. C.A. has told us that he's going to do a short, you know, maybe 5-minute piece to start that is a bit more experimental in nature. It may even include some music. And then after that, he's going to read The Book of Frank, one of my recent favorite books of poetry, in its entirety. So, you know, sit back, drink some kombucha, maybe do a little light stretching. But please focus your ears and mind on the wonderful voice of C.A. Conrad.
When my book Advanced Elvis Course came out, it was like coming out all over again to yet another hostile tribe of idiots. Some of those Elvis fans lost their minds that a faggot would dare write about his love of the king. The death threats were inventive, at least. Better than the standard die faggot email. Still, it's important to write back to people who have read your book, even if they hate it and insist that you die slowly and painfully. which is really just a little allegory for how they want to have sex with you, with a burn on the slowly driven flesh. But for each hateful homophobic email, I replied with a photo of my middle finger, the nail encrusted in bright violet glitter. I aimed every light in the house on that nail until it was the most glorious fuck you I've ever seen in my life! I was almost in tears looking at it, so blindingly purple and magnificent. My fingernail was beautiful, and it was my fingernail, and I loved it! And I said,
"Fingernail, my dear, when we get together with Norberto tonight, you will have a very special visit with your favorite hole and his favorite hole."
I'm quite good at keeping promises, especially the important ones. But with the photo, I also sent the bigots my deconstruction of Elvis's blockbuster hit, Jailhouse Rock, one of Rolling Stone magazine's top 100 songs of all time. Give the lyrics a close listen. No female pronouns or names. And then that delicious line,
"You're the cutest jailbird I ever did see! I sure would be delighted with your company! Come on and do the Jailhouse Rock with me!"
That's right! Gay prison sex fantasy 101. I love to imagine the ridiculous exclamations after my close reading of Jailhouse Rock sinks into their thick skulls.
"No, Elvis, no! Please don't be a cocksucker, Elvis!"
It cheers my soul. How is it possible that so many are so naive? I mean, take a look at the clothing Elvis wore.
Fringe.
Glitter.
Sequins.
Glitter.
Rhinestones.
Glitter.
Ha! That, my friends, is a wardrobe born out of a dick-sucking episode, and let there be no doubt about it! Elvis was having more fun than most people realized. He never let a couple of extra penises in bed get in the way of having a good time. There's enough lettuce for all the rabbits, as my Nana Conrad used to say.
Oh, I was about to see you all, but now I don't. Thank you all for coming, and thank you to everybody who made this trip possible. I'm very excited to be here, very happy. The generosity has been humbling. When I was first thinking about making this event page with Facebook, I was pressured with Facebook to choose an image, and so I went into the Google and put in San Francisco image search, and, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge came up, and cable cars and hills, and I didn't want to, this is your home, you know, I didn't want to say this is where the reading's going to be. And, then a photograph of Anton LaVey came up, and that was very exciting. You live in the home of Anton LaVey, the sexiest Satanist to ever walk the planet. Kevin Killian told me that they ripped down his house, and I just don't know how you let that happen to this national treasure. But you know, it would be like you coming to Philadelphia and choosing Benjamin Franklin for your events page or the Liberty Bell. There are poets in Philly who would really take a they would tell you that they didn't like that just before you got up to the microphone to sort of throw you off, maybe. But I like both of them. I think that Benjamin Franklin's very sexy, and I think the Liberty Bell is much sexier. And I'm actually putting notes together and drafting a letter to the National Parks Division to ask permission to do performance art around the Liberty Bell. One of the things I have in mind is to fill the crack with dark chocolate and then suck my way through the chocolate from the bottom up. You want to go bottom up. And then hand out little pamphlets that I have drafts of. I'm going to send that with a letter telling the tourists how dark chocolate affects the same part of your brain that helps, that is affected by foreplay to get you ready for sex. And then it talks about how sex and liberty really need to come together, and it's this whole thing I have. It's like a whole conflation. And I go to the Liberty Bell a lot. I walk by it a lot. And there's one security guard in there who I see, he's there. That's where he works. And he always glares at me. I mean, I always wave, and he always glares and nods, which, frankly, I don't really understand. I guess he just thinks I'm suspicious because I'm there a lot. I'm there too much, maybe. But, I mean, I go to a grocery store around the corner for myself 3 times a week for a new tomato, and I know those people, and they're very nice. But it's not the same with this guy. And about 15 years ago, I was seeing this guy named Christopher, who was one of these frustrated actors in Philadelphia who would go up to New York every week to audition for a musical or something. But frustrated actors in Philadelphia wind up always doing a summer tourist stint in the historic district, working with the dressed up in their tri-cornered hats and carrying muzzles, or, you know, muzzle loaders around and all that. And muskets, I mean. That's what I mean. But, anyway, you know. But occasionally I would meet Christopher at his lunch break on a bench near the Commodore Barry statue. And, you know, he was always very angry. He was angry like 23 out of 24 hours, and I was always trying to find that, get there at that 1 hour. And I don't know, he was like angry about something, and I just couldn't handle anymore, and I said, I want to have sex with you on the Liberty Bell. And he knew me enough to know that I wasn't like, oh, let's have, you know, wouldn't it be nice to... He knew that I was like, let's figure this out. I want to do this. And he said, no way, man, there's cameras, there's guards. Then I said, well, I want to have sex with you in Independence Hall on the table where they signed the Declaration of Independence. And he said, no, that's like Fort Knox over there. You can't even like get near where their Benjamin Franklin spectacles are right there, you know. And then I said, well, I want to have sex with you in Betsy Ross's house. And he thought about it for a minute. I said, you know, it might be possible. And he was happy. It was made the happy hour for him. And he said, I'm going back to work. You go home. And then early in the evening, he called me up. He's like, get over to Betsy's house. We've got fucking to do in Betsy's house. So I was very excited. I jumped on my bike and raced over to Betsy's house. I knocked on her door. And he answered, and he was already like half naked. And I said, you're keeping the tri-cornered hat on, though. Because he looked just like Marianne Moore's angry, hot great-nephew. But, so that was very fun. Betsy Ross's house. Maybe we should all, like, make that a thing when you come to visit. Try to, like, have sex at her house. But my whole point for this is, you know, you could choose the Liberty Bell and I wouldn't be upset. But anyway, I found this image... of this beautiful photograph of the Bay Area shot from outer space somehow on a satellite, I don't know. But it was really just wonderful, and I just fell in love with it, and I put it up there. And then Frank Sherlock called me later that evening, and he said, you know, that photograph you put up there of the Bay Area shot from outer space kind of looks like a vagina. And I said, yeah, it really is nice. It's sort of... mossy greens and blues and brown, this little weird red spot at one point. But anyway, thank you for having us read our poems in your beautiful vagina, San Francisco. I'm going to start off with, since the theme is class on warfare. I'm going to start off with Samantha mentioned the somatics, and I tend to say keep the O long, somatic, because I isolate the word soma within the word somatic, and I do both. The somatic word somatic, as in the Greek word for tissue, nervous system, and then soma, the Indo-Iranian word, which literally means to press and be newly born, because they used to take sort of like wheatgrass and acid is the equivalent. It's like they took energizing plants and psychedelic plants and pressed them together, juiced them, and they would, you know, whirl around and have visions. But the thing is, it's a compass for working in between that, these poems. That's the idea of it. So with my first experiment with it was eating a single color of food all day. And I'm going to read two of those. That became Somatic Midge. And since this is September 11th, I'm going to read the white poem, which is titled, From the Womb, Not the Anus, White Asbestos Snowfall on 9/11. Now, what I mean by that is, 8 years ago today, I was watching the news, like probably everybody here, and I saw Peter Jennings interview at least one of the engineers of the Twin Towers. And Peter Jennings asked him, well, what is this big cloud of dust coming down the street? What are the contents of that cloud? And the first thing that he said was, well, some of it is asbestos. 15 minutes later, after this interview, Peter Jennings comes back on. He says, we'd like to correct the, you know, last interview. There is no asbestos. And, you know, the fucking engineer ought to know if there's asbestos in there. I think we'll go with that. And it really made me angry because the EPA recently found more asbestos in air ducts on Wall Street. Clearly from that, you know, it's not like they're just shooting asbestos out of planes or something. So that's why I call it that. From the womb, not the anus, white asbestos snowfall on 9/11. Written after eating only white foods for a day while under the influence of 108, written on my forehead with fresh semen. My boyfriend's. It's a dog, my heart. My war hair gets the dead tangled express meshed scent to meet the approaching fist. Wince but do not burn away. From more than one thing and more than one day, apathy. Break from room where electricity hums for years. Retrieve mind from socket and tingly crotch that created this world. Does having the ear of angels impress? But I would rather speak to you. Dear Admiral White Pants, thanks for the field guide to extinct animals. You make me the belly who birds push through at last. The rich can hire a dominatrix. My mother could only afford to marry badly. Everything you know and do not know can be yanked apart no matter who you can afford. Post-traumatic stress, the grass bleeding chlorophyll. Do you like your fluids to travel together? Tell me, please, about the calm you seek when war is over. My uncle sneered to say, what a horrible soldier you would make. Nicest thing anyone's ever said of me. A dove lands, but I say nothing, no spell broken. So the other one from this collection I'm going to read is the Green Poem. And it was a lot easier to eat green food all day, I found. I didn't have to use food coloring. This one appeared originally in War and Peace, that Leslie Scalapino and Judith Goldman published. Say it with green paint for the comfort and healing of their wounds. Written after eating only green foods for a day, while under the influence of green nail polish on my middle fingers. Not until we're all protected, he said. Not until we're all unprotected, I said. Descent of magnets we come to bank ourselves against. The tomb radiates life without pause. Yes, that's your insurance agent overhead in first class. Cash webs form, water sends instinct home. A switch inside the queen's body stops producing workers to send out a queen. The babysitter of empire wants a raise. Right on walls, right on courthouse sidewalks, right on every single mirror you can find, I make holes in Iraqi families every time I pay my taxes. All these centuries later, the occupation still unwittingly shapes the resistance. Eruptions at night we only hear to know. Burying dead batteries under the green flag of the desert. It's all quite stunning, sealed under reactions. Everybody needs a lover in wartime. Fuck for the dead. Fuck and love fucking for the dead. After the latest body count, fuck and fuck and fuck the prayer of fucking. Run onto the streets screaming death down. Terrible vacancies for either hand. Settle into missing time, flat on the grass, smoking hash until the butterfly. Hyperapathy? I'm telling you this only once. You're outside your jurisdiction. So, I'm going to read two. So that was the sort of way I started doing somatics, and then this is where it went after that. I started making these complicated exercises, but I have to write down as I'm creating them and as I'm doing them at the same time. And then, so I'm going to read the exercise, and I've taken to titling the exercises, and then I'm going to read the poem. I'm going to do two of these. The first one is called, the exercise is called White Helium, and it's for Sharon Mesmer. Take a white helium balloon with a red string into a private room where no one can see you or bother you. Don't even let them know you have it and hide it in a closet when it's not in use. You need 4 consecutive days for this exercise. Day 1. Chew your favorite gum while naked in bed or on the floor, but on your back, arms behind your head, legs spread apart, relaxed with your balloon on the ceiling above you. After your gum is sufficiently chewed and soft, stick the end of the red string into the gum, then shove it the gum into your navel. Work it in there. Relax again with the balloon above you, now attached to your navel. Navels are the scars from birth, scars which are the center of gravity. Take notes about your navel now, filled with gum and balloon string. Mother fed you through this before you were born. Chocolate, spaghetti, tangerines, mayonnaise, and turnips, and cashews, and pickled beets. You process shit and other excretions through this. You live through this hole with the balloon now holding on. Take many notes. Day 2. Sit naked on the floor while holding the balloon to your forehead. Rub it into your third eye, bouncing your head gently into it over and over. Hum into it while thinking about your day, especially something that might have irritated you. Hum louder when irritating thoughts come to mind. Take notes. Now tie the red string around your penis. If you don't have a penis, tie it around a dildo inserted into your vagina or around your thigh. Then walk around with your balloon bouncing above you. Read a favorite, very favorite book of poetry, stopping from time to time to take notes about reading this book naked with your balloon attached to you. How is it different reading this book naked with your balloon? Now read your favorite poem in this book backwards, out loud, last word first, even read the title backwards. Take notes, day 3. Cut a little hair from your head and pubic hair and tape it to your balloon. Let the balloon rest on the ceiling while you sit on the floor naked, looking at your bits of hair above you. Bring your balloon down slowly and study the hair and let it float back to the ceiling. Bring it down again, and without thinking about it, what to draw, draw in spontaneous drawings with several colored magic markers. Let it float back to the ceiling. While it's on the ceiling, take notes about what you've just drawn. What does it look like? How do you feel about what you've just drawn? Take notes about each color and how you used each color. Bring your balloon back down by the string and study it closer. Day 4. Smear snot or blood or semen or pussy juice or earwax or spit or piss or vomit or sweat or whatever excretion you have available onto your balloon. Hold onto the string as it floats above you. Relax on the floor. You're supposed to hold on to it now. I didn't write that down. Okay. Hold on to your string as it floats above you. Relax on your back on the floor. Hold the string by your toes with your legs extended. Look at the balloon with binoculars. What emblem is this? What Jolly Roger? What letter of love or apology is this? What declaration? Take notes, take notes. Slowly let the air out and put the balloon with all its hair and drawings and secretions into a sock and put the sock under your pillow. In the morning, take notes about dreams you had, especially if the balloon appeared. Your excretions had just been floating above you the night before. What was in your dreams? Take notes. Now take all your notes and use the filters river and basket to shape your poem. Okay, so this is the poem after doing that. And the poem is titled, Every Weakness of the World in One Limb for a Day. Fighting impulse to interpret another suicide's intentions. A jab at the oldest place we could find in the sometime of temporal sometime. The band played, You've Lost That Love and Feeling at the wedding. His ass, the template of my life. Glaciers melting as my interest in ice hockey grows. I cannot recalibrate the runaway graph of these opposites. Poland came back after disappearing. Geography's much easier through war. Waiting for the bus, I let it go to keep in the poem. These residual hauntings sound redundant until they visit no more. Maps born headfirst from war. I'm talking about real equality, the equality of economics. Hideous words and computer code avalanche compassionate stasis. The compulsion to reproduce? I don't have it. You weren't born. You can't hear me say, I'm glad. Maps bathed in testosterone in utero. An unexpected pint of blood shot from the engine. I will die angry for dying. I will resist. I am going to resist. I am resistance in the making. Visit cancer wards. Take notes for the war ahead. I want to be here to meet you, new beautiful friend. Wondering how to love this world without sounding silly? Ah, too late. So, do you want to hear another somatic exercise? And okay, I'm trying to gauge whether I should just move on to these other things. This one is one of the newest ones, and David Brazil and Sarah Larson published this in the latest issue of Try, and thank them for that. And this is called You and Your Soup, and it's for Juliana Spar and David Book. First, we must gather ingredients for the soup. It's whatever you want, but my soup included carrots, onions, beets, burdock roots, celery, kale, mustard, greens, chard. Four roots, four stalks, and greens were in even exchange with yang underground and yin above ground, salt, and water. Before chopping, sit with all your ingredients in your lap, or at least near you, while you meditate, however it is you meditate. But try to meditate on how this food sort is about to become your body. Chop and cook your soup. After your soup has cooled, place the soup in a deep bowl, deep enough you can submerge your hand. Unplug the phone, ignore the world. If you are right-handed, then your left hand will be submerged into the soup, or the reverse, if the reverse. Sit for a while with eyes closed, feeling the soup with the submerged hand. Pinch bits of carrot or whatever is in there. Feel it before it's eaten. Take notes about your body and the soup in the bowl before it becomes your body. The roots have recently been humming underground, foraging themselves, stalks and leaves stretching into the light and rain, and slight flutter of insect wings. All have now cooked together to become you. Take notes, many notes. Use a huge spoon if you have one, this to reduce your sense of your own size. Take notes about what this means to you to reduce your sense of your own size. Dip the spoon into the soup, scraping your hand, eat. Take notes about how this tastes. Take notes about your marinated hand soup. Are the ingredients organic? Take notes. Source of the sources for the notes now. Were the ingredients GMO? How do you feel about GMO foods? Notes. Cup your submerged hand and eat from it. Run your tongue along the surface of your hand and lick your fingers clean. Put your hand back in your soup. Can you feel the soup in your body and your blood coursing through you? Can you feel this yet? Eat your soup with your huge spoon and cupped hand. Eat it, licking the bowl and licking your hand clean. Take notes about anything that comes to mind, pressing your now soupless hand to your forehead, thinking, anything at all, running your soupless hand all over your head while thinking and writing. Now take all your notes and use the filters Accentuate and Engine to shape your poem. This is the poem that I wrote after doing it. Kick the flush. When I die, I want the blue lights in my head to come on. When I wake tomorrow, I want the blue lights to disappear. It's not extinction, it's a new bloom who weeds can grow up with. A marvelous understatement opening miles. We never counted how many dents we made in his head. We just wanted the giant unconscious. We wanted safety, we were too frightened to fucking count. We're driving away faster than faster and faster. No one needs to know how many dents we put in his head. Give me over listless to a grass-filled moat whose seismic odor gives me up easy as anyone some days. Innocence pleasing. It's the impossibility of innocence pleasing this gonad plantation. But it ain't coming up through me, bonusing out the systems with a fadeaway sentence of the sun. Keep your threats at blade level so they see we mean it. This is not a fucking joke, you dirty pothead. Death hurts faster when flying. The giant held us to the light to squint at our translucent qualities. We were never traded cold. We were wild by the inches. We were always his favorite. As my smell of memory insists, he could, if he wanted to, develop an odor to please us, take his shirt off, aid our anticipation. But when he demanded respect, he was surprised to find out what he really deserved. The problem with giants is they believe they're mothers. They imbibe tears of suffering flowers. We grab umbrellas, gravitate toward a past vantage of water. Planes is how we hear the sky, the idiot giant would tell us. It was his need to apologize that drove him to uploading rude sensations, his fracture of listening causing whistle blanks. That's when we woke the blue lights in his head. It's how we earned our freedom. Now I open my gorgeous entrails to the sun, let birds circle with watering mouths, sew myself up before they land, teasing birds with my beautiful guts, my lifelong dream fulfilled. Is Matilda here?
Yeah.
Matilda, I wanted to dedicate the reading of this next poem to you. This is from the Book of Frank. When Frank was born, father inspected the small package the nurse handed him. But where's my daughter's cunt? My daughter has no cunt. Mother leaned from the bed. This is your awful son, dear. Your son has no cunt. Why doesn't my son have a cunt? What has happened? What a wicked world, dark and spinning on its one good leg. Frank hated the 9 miscarriages kept in jars of formaldehyde. Mother burped each one, spooned peas against the glass. She rocked them all at once in her arms, no room for Frank. You are too big for a jar, my child. You will betray me the rest of your life. Frank grew crows for hands. It was a difficult childhood. At dinner during prayers, crows flapped excited in the name of the Lord. Frank, keep still, mother hollered. Did you wash your crows? Did you wash your filthy, stinking crows? When father died, Frank was found straddling him, his crows picking the 7 gold fillings. Frank saw a giant eat a park bench with her vagina. Drink a swimming pool with her vagina. I saw her swallow the baby and spit out the crib, Frank said. He tiptoed past her snoring uterus one night and heard a few familiar voices cry out. Would you sign my book, Mr. Poe? Frank asked the pile of bones amidst shovels of dirt. Why, certainly, young man, answers Frank in a different voice. Frank puts 4, 5, 6 sticks of dynamite in his mouth. He lights a match, imagines the gold it'll knock out of his head. In the laundromat, Frank found blueprints for a cocoon dropped from a caterpillar's pocket. I must try this at once, I must try this at once, he chanted, marching home. So this book was originally going to be published by Jargon Society, by Jonathan Williams, but he became very ill, and when he was in the hospital, I wrote this for him to cheer him up. I think it did, for Jonathan Williams. Frank is grateful for the ride, but knows most trucks carry semen stains. Looking for these, the driver asks, pointing to eager swimmers, long since dried on radio, ashtray, cup holder. Frank calls, boring, out the door, and shoots whoever shows up. I'm here for the show, the man said, looking under Frank's shirt for the door. I'm no theater, Frank said. A line formed. Must he admit them all? Many had umbrellas. A blind woman waited with her dog. It's going to be a great show, someone said, but when's he going to let us in? Frank's tears began to fall. Someone ripped his doors open. They filled him for an hour. At the party, everyone traced fingers on their bodies where they preferred to have cancer if they had to have cancer. The host asked Frank where he'd like to have his. What a question, Frank said. I'd like my cancer right here, and traced a circle on the host instead. Is no one else sick of this paralysis of gravity, Frank asks. When I was a boy, I stepped into the sky, and I was a boy, not a surrealist. Part of the dream is that you accept your waking life as part of the dream. Pig says to Frank, this fence keeps you in your world. Frank says to Pig, this fence keeps you in your world. Pig says to Frank, this fence keeps you in your world. Frank says to Pig, this fence keeps you in your world. Pig says to Frank, this fence keeps you in your world. Nobody wins. I wrote that last one on the 20th anniversary of being a vegetarian a couple years ago, seeing a horrible documentary about pigs. It just really was sad. Oh, so I'm going to finish now with some pages from another new book. The Book of Frank came out in March, and this just came out a couple months ago. It's called Advanced Elvis Course. And I'm very excited that that this has come out. And the first half of the book is written from my visits to Graceland over the years. And a lot of it contains conversations with people, things I overheard, dreams I had. And it also involves, I grew up in rural Pennsylvania, and I have in here the Seder formula that the old women used to make and carry around, and it's to destroy your enemies, basically, and they're very serious about it, and they made hex signs. But I created one with this woman named Freya Aswin. I didn't want to destroy my enemies. I wanted one that helped my enemies have a safe landing and understand how they fucked me over. And so it's an Elvis. So this one actually dates back to, even though it was this Pennsylvania Dutch culture where they were making the Seder formula, it predates the Rhineland where they brought it from to the, actually way before the Romans and back to Etruscan times. And they actually don't know how old it is, but anyway, it does work, this one. But I'm hoping that the Elvis one works too. When this book first came out, there was no, when Soft Skull Press put this out, there was no queer content in the press releases. I don't know, it was just, I don't know who made the decision, but the decision was made, and it went out, and then and Elvis.com picked up the title, and were like, hey, this new book's coming out. And and then the Brooklyn Rail did a review of the book, a very favorable review, but they had queer content in the review. And then Elvis.com posted the whole review, which they don't usually do. They just copy the whole thing, like here. And ever since then, I get this incredible vitriol from Elvis fans about, you pervert, you know. So what I did was I took the lyrics to Jailhouse Rock and I deconstructed it for them. There are no female pronouns or women's names. It's all Bugsy says to, you know, Nix, you know, and they're all fucking one another, and there's one guy who's very sad. I guess he was raped in the shower, and it's this whole, like, gay sex prison fantasy, that song, and it really just sends them right over the edge, which is right where I want them. So, but one of the things that I do, I used the book for Priscilla Presley's book, Elvis and Me, as a memoir, and I used that as divination where you open and close the book 9 times with a question, and then you'll find your answer. It works every time. But another thing I do is I listen to his music on headphones and let him guide me. It really works in Memphis. But it was a real challenge in Philadelphia. But I did it this one time when the Delacroix exhibition came to Philadelphia. So this is, I'm going to start off with that. It starts off with a quote from Delacroix. "The things that are most real to me are the illusions which I create with my painting. Everything else is a quicksand." Delacroix, 1824. The Delacroix exhibition came to the Philadelphia Museum of Art. I wore headphones, listening to my Elvis CD, letting Elvis guide me through the 19th century paintings, letting him feel our way from room to room. I wanted to spend time with the painting Ovid in Exile, but Elvis wanted lions, 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 lions. He was singing Don't Be Cruel, and I stopped in front of the painting titled Young Woman Attacked by a Tiger. Don't be cruel to a heart that's true. What is it, Elvis? What? What is it? Baby, it's just you I'm thinking of. In the gift shop, there are Delacroix t-shirts, Delacroix postcards, Delacroix jigsaw puzzles, Delacroix baseball caps, Delacroix notepads, Delacroix videotapes, Delacroix pencils, and more. The yuppies rolled their eyes at my Elvis t-shirt and whispered to one another while purchasing their Delacroix coffee mugs. They're fools, really. They think this gift shop is any different from Graceland with its Elvis wristwatches and Elvis cookie jars and Elvis shot glasses. One man wearing a $3,000 Titan Briani suit purchased a Delacroix baseball cap and CD titled Music and the Time of Delacroix. They're absurd Americans just like me. We are the world's ridiculous, beautiful clowns. Get used to it, my people. Oh, and I have another quote from Delacroix's journal. They are going to launch a large vessel called a clipper at noon today. Another of these American inventions to make people go faster and faster. When they have managed to get travelers comfortably seated inside a cannon so they can be shot off like bullets in any given direction, civilization will doubtless have taken a great step forward. We are making rapid strides towards that happy time when space will have been abolished. But they will never abolish boredom. From Eugene Delacroix, 1825. He was grumpy. Matilda Sycamore Bernstein is putting out an anthology that this piece is a part of, an essay that I wrote about being fat and queer. The essay I wrote is called Going from Zero to Sexy on the High Caloric Queer Overdrive, which is all my whole thing, like working at Giovanni's Room. I've been macrobiotic for 10 years, and then I just started being vegetarian and started to gain weight, and all my gay man friends were like, what are you doing, you know? But then I found out there were all these men who loved fat gay men, and it was like a rock star, because there really aren't any fat gay men. So they're all mine, these guys. They make me cupcakes, and okay. There are gay men I know who are only attracted to the fat Elvis, and you feel the soft purr as they talk about his chubby neck and breasts. Some people get angry when debating how long Elvis was fat, furiously whittling it down to 6 months, as though the dead are anything but thin. Let me assure you that a photograph of the fat Elvis will not evaporate from your wall in 6 months. Yes, you can jerk off to it for the rest of your life, I promise. Oh, so this is the piece then that the Brooklyn Rail posted that made the Elvis fans really angry. More than anything at all, I want permission from Lisa Marie to spend one night in his bedroom, on the floor, next to his bed, naked, dressed in a body condom, imagining I'm his happy little sperm, after he's gone to sleep, pressed to my condom wall, looking to the moonlit window, quietly, peacefully turning from a thick, white, almond-flavored cream to a clear, sticky puddle, the expired egg seeker, once blissfully shot from his hardened, kingly shaft. Oh, man, what a ride. They're not happy with that. Elvis caught my soul in the air like a rose between his teeth. Okay, so another thing I did was I went all across Philadelphia with, because because the last part of the book, the last half of the book is called The Philadelphia Elvis Experiment. There's a lot of Elvis fans, and this is what the flyer looked like, and I put it all over, and they could tear off the bottom, and you would call my answering machine and talk to Elvis. So I collected some of my favorites. This is some of them. This is from my answering machine. It would be filled all the time, by the way. Beep. I'll be bulimic for you, Elvis, if you'll be bulimic for me. Beep. Hi, Elvis. Hi, I just wanted to say that I believe if they had Prozac back in your time, it could have helped you, you know, be happier and not do all those drugs and stuff. I'm on Prozac. It is wonderful. I could be the Prozac poster girl. Well, anyway, yay Prozac and yay Elvis. Beep. Eat me, Elvis. But I'm a lesbian, so you can't. Unless K.D. Lang really is you. Beep. Hey there, this is Elvis Presley. I just want to say I appreciate what you're doing and keep the faith. Beep. Elvis, my name is Madeline. I'm your illegitimate child, so please send money or presents to 512 South 3rd Street. My birthday's coming up soon. Please don't forget, Dad. If I stand still long enough, I would be a place. And no one wants to visit a place that's been a man too long. Elvis once stood still for 5 minutes in downtown Memphis. Stood still in such a way, no one knew how to get there. There's a lot of things in here that really happened, and this is one of them. We go to a lot of pagan gatherings, and there's this wonderful group of witches in New Brunswick, New Jersey, called the White Trash Coven, and I hang out with them a lot because they have a VW bus that it's a traveling Elvis altar. At a pagan gathering, I'm having martinis with Rose by the White Trash Coven's Elvis altar when a naked man with a goat on a leash says hello and drops on all fours to worship Elvis. The goat promptly mounts him and fucks his ass. Bell around his neck, clang, clang, clang. It all happened so quickly. The goat came up his ass with a grunt and they were on their way. We didn't know what to say. We hadn't prepared for the goat man's visit. Rose threw her martini back and opened a new bottle of gin, because even if someone had said a man was going to get fucked by a goat at the Elvis altar, there's still no way to prepare. You simply cannot prepare. One of my favorite vices is littering in wealthy neighborhoods. For days, I save litter for the million-dollar houses and condominiums. Candy wrappers, wads of dirty tissues, used condoms, mayonnaise jars nearly licked clean, expired Atlantic City casino coupons. I kiss my picture of Elvis and promise him I will never litter in the neighborhoods of the poor. Never. I can hear him answer, "Let the rich man know his true worth. Let him see the condition of his soul on the streets outside his home. I promise, Elvis, I will. I will." When I was 12, I understood the love of Elvis in ways impalpable to others. Approaching a stop sign on my bicycle, I would exalt the truth of his love. I know you love me, and I can ride through the stop sign without looking. Flying through the intersection with closed eyes, free and loved. Honk, honk. You almost got run the fuck over, you stupid fucking kid. Ah, almost meant he was there for me. He can, like no one, keep death at bay. It's moments like this when I wish Elvis had molested me instead of the creepy neighbor guy. All the worst things could be better with his divine hillbilly hands. Thank you all.
Wow.
Boy, yeah, wow.
Yeah. You can say that again, Steve.
I might. Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, and our studio audience sure liked it too. Did you hear all that chuckling?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. He's such a raconteur that it's hard to know when the poem has actually started. But then also part of the poem is are these like lengthy prologues to what the poem is that have a similar character to just the regular storytelling, kind of. So it's also very hard to know when he's talking, when you're in one space or another space. It's a pretty incredible effect, I think. I mean, especially compared to reading it written on a page where it's clear what's what. Do you know what I mean?
You know, I gotta ask Steve, what do you guys think about Elvis back in Canada?
Oh, he's okay. You know, it's not the same thing as it is here. But, you know, you can still buy Elvis busts.
Yeah. I can remember being 16 or so and going to Subway one night. My mother had these evenings called Fend for Yourself Night, where you'd get, my brother and I would each get 10 or 20 bucks or something, and we'd have to go fend for ourselves, like cavemen or something, which basically just meant driving to the closest fast food place and getting some food. And I remember going to Subway on one of those Fend for Yourself nights, and I was waiting in line, and the most beautiful song was playing. It was just blowing me away, this, you know, crystalline guitar and this thick, rich voice, and I could not place it in my musical memory at all. So I had to ask the cashier, who was this kind of disgruntled 20-something, and he told me it was Elvis, and I couldn't believe it. And I've been a listener ever since.
Wow. That is something. That is such an American story in a weird way, like just encountering Elvis in a fast food context and then having him win you over like that, right?
Yeah, I know. All just because of Fend for Yourself Night. Who would have thought?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I mean, growing up in Toronto, I guess, I fended for myself a lot because you just, you know, you walk around after school and you just do what you want to do. You know, have you heard that Drake song, Started from the Bottom? That's like very close to the experience I had growing up as a completely middle-class person in Toronto. And you would, like, you know, maybe ride the subway with your friends to go somewhere else, and then you'd eat over there and then come home later and maybe do a little homework and go to bed or something. But I, you know, I have a feeling that your experience with Elvis is pretty different from CA's experience of Elvis, or maybe just not experience but interest in Elvis, you know. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure. My guess is that CA is interested in Elvis because he was transgressive. You know, he went up on the TV and he shook his hips in a way that the popular majority found a little too sexual for their tastes. And in that way, he challenged the norms of sexuality, which I my suspicion is that that is something that CA is interested in. I mean, there was that small clue where he talked about, you know, his favorite finger finding one of his friend's favorite holes or something like that. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not quite a euphemism.
Not subtle. Not,
just pretty brute force imagery.
Right out there. Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. I think it's a little different than crystalline guitar lines.
Well, we should probably leave it there. I'm sure that was exhilarating enough for our listeners tonight. And we will continue to try our best to transgress here on The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio. Good night, Los Angeles.
Good night.